Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing Podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you'd experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. Here we go. This was published on the 14th of April, 2022, and is entitled Three Perfect Tools. We live in a world of things that have product managers and design teams and documentation architecture and often vast ambition, and yet so many of them are so bad. And worse, some which are good then become bad for no reason. And there's a link in there to a piece I wrote about how good apps go bad in an awful, annoying way. There is a particular joy in a product that just does what you need done in about the way you expect, or thrillingly, better, and isn't hard to figure out and doesn't change unnecessarily. Here are three to learn from. Splitter. At our cabin, we have reasonably modern electric heat that keeps things comfy, but for our occasional winter visits, we also have a nice efficient wood stove. Because we are surrounded by 100-plus-year-old forest, some of which falls down, or rarely is cut if it threatens to fall in the wrong place, there's plenty of wood to burn. But it comes in big pieces that have to be sawed down to short sections, then split into pieces small enough to fit in the stove. Normally, splitting wood is a joyous form of light exercise. Hit the end of the fragment with a decent axe, put a little oomph in it, and the wood springs apart. Very satisfying. But certain pieces of wood are some combination of hard and knotty and twisted and big. Even a reasonably skilled wood splitter can be driven to distraction. For these, what you need is this spiral splitting wedge. And here there is a picture of a spiral splitting wedge, which I find it hard to describe. It's painted bright red, and it doesn't look like really anything else in the world, but it's got it's sharp at one end and flat on the other, and you hit it on the flat end, and that drives the sharp end into the wood, and then it's wedge-shaped and also twisted. This spiral splitting wedge, which I bought from Lee Valley, and that's a link to it, you position it judiciously against the end of the fragment, pound away with a hammer. I use a nice little one-hand, 4-pound sledge, which seems about right. You don't have to hit it that hard, just enough for the blade to bite. Then the combination of the wedge's spread and its spiral twist inexorably rips apart the awfulest, gnarliest firewood. Not quite as satisfying as an axe on a clean straight piece, but then few things are. Just works. It is cheap. Then you curl up on the sofa facing the stove, feeling virtuous while the rain lashes the windows and metal roof, and watch the kids toast marshmallows. I'm pretty sure the design of this product hasn't changed in my lifetime, and I live without fear that it will, because the one we have will definitely be working long after I'm gone. Next, barbecue. Our cabin barbecue died as a consequence of being left out in the rain too much during the current renovation. It was at least a decade old, and we replaced it with the current equivalent model, Weber Q3200, and there's a link there, to the Canadian site, by the way, which, because it's compact, easy to roll around, and can feed 8 people with a little cooking forethought and ingenuity. And here's a picture of it. It looks like a barbecue. It's round, not square. If you care, you can go find a picture. Compared to the model it had just replaced, the changes were subtle and thoughtful. A slightly slicker tank retainer, a better spark mechanism, and an elegant little battery electric light placed just right for those times when you're cooking after dark. So why am I so excited about this decent but pedestrian product? Partly because it hasn't changed. The design is pretty well correct, and no hyper-over-entitled product manager has been allowed to introduce any bold new paradigms. But the great thing, the truly great thing, is the assembly instructions. There are quite a few pieces, but they all fit together in only one way, which is the right way, and they snap into place, and the directions illustrate each step in a way that no one, no matter how clueless, can misinterpret. You go from flat pack to working barbecue in an astonishingly short amount of time with not a good single reason to swear. This appeals to a lot of my core values. And should you get an invitation to our cabin, I'll demonstrate the machine's excellence with a hearty serving of Eastern Mediterranean chicken kebabs. And I provide the spellings in Arabic, Hebrew, and Turkish. The only one I can actually read is Arabic, and in Arabic it's shish tavuk. These kebabs have reduced strong men to tears of joy. Music writer. My music teacher, and that's a link to Russell Shumsky, who teaches West African drumming, sent me a Roomba score we were going to work on, which meant picking up the MuseScore app, and that's a pointer to the website for the app. I hadn't used it in years, but as soon as I opened it, I smiled, because it's truly great software. Now, you have to know how to read music and the names of all the little glyphs and markers that appear in it, but if you do, you can teach yourself in almost no time to produce a pretty damn decent looking score, and do so quickly. I don't remember ever opening a tutorial or reading a how-to. The first time I wanted to capture some music, I just opened it up, dived in, and figured it out. When was that first time? Last century, when I was studying cello, my teacher, and that's a link to my old cello teacher, Robin Kopas, a couple of times a year, held friends and family recitals that filled most of a medium-sized church. They were fun. One time, I performed a duet with my wife, Lauren, who has a light, soaring soprano, an arrangement I made of Simon and Garfunkel's Scarborough Fair Canticle. For the first part, I just played chordal pizzicato background to her voice. For the middle part, with the two voices, the cello took the second, with lots of legato. I think the voice-cello trade-off sounded intense and lovely, and we got a nice, vigorous round of applause. Now here's a sample of the main and middle sections, and here we have two little fragments of music, which, I tell you, look just like they came out of a professionally published music score. In case anyone out there plays the cello or any other alto to bass register instrument and wants to take a run at this, here is a link to the music, which is a PDF. It doesn't include full lyrics or the vocal line, but that's okay, because I bet most singers already know it, and will be comfy in E minor. At the event, I used a handwritten score, whereby written, I mean scribbled. My handwriting is terrible, and that includes music. A couple of fellow students asked for copies, so I downloaded MuseScore, and within a couple of hours I had it. When I fooled with that Roomba just recently, I found it similarly effortless. But wait, there's more! The MuseScore app is open source, free, standards compliant, well documented, and seems to have a lively community around it. Isn't that great? I suspect this is because whenever you're in a room full of serious software practitioners, the proportion that are competent amateur musicians is going to be way higher than in the general population. So the number of people who combine programming talent and music literacy isn't small. Anyhow, it's 2022, and the world is terrible, but still has good things in it. We need more like these, please. And that's all, folks.